ပြောစခါတော့ပြီးပြီဒါပေမဲ့ကြားတော့တော့မပြီးပါဘူ
း The meditation retreat is over but meditation practice is not over don't let meditation practice end
အရင်ဆုံးမပြောချင်တဲ့ဆိုတော့ဒီတရားပွဲပြည့်မြောက်အောင်ကြိုးပမ်းခဲ့တယ်ဥပါရောအစသာရဟောပါဝင်တဲ့ယောဂီတွေရောအားလုံးပေါ့တရားစခန်းနဲ့ပတ်သက်တဲ့အလူအားလုံးကျေးဇူးတင
် Firstly Seattle would like to thank everybody who has made this retreat possible Uwai and all the people who helped him organize this retreat and right down to the yogis he would like to thank all of you for being here
မနေ့ကအရီဇိုနာလာတဲ့အချိန်အစီအစဉ်မရှိသေးဘူးဒီလာပြတရားလာပြမယ်ဆိုတော့ဒီကွာပြင်မလို့ပြတော့မှအဲစီစဉ်ဖြစ်သွ
ား There was no plan to come for a retreat to this part of the west coast even last year when Seattle met with some of you in Arizona he says it was only later on that when Uhuai heard about the schedule for this yearthat he invited Seattle to spend time here for a retreat in between the other two retreats and so this retreat has happened yeah and so since he was going to fly into San Francisco to go to Spirit Rock then it was easy to come here for this retreat he was very pleased with this retreatHe's very thankful to all of you for practicing. If there's a teacher but the yogis don't practice, he says, then it's not working. So thank you for practicing. So for any one effect to take place, many conditions must come together. It's not enough for one condition to give rise to one effect. Seattle says there is something that delusion loves to hear and that's to hear us say the meditation is over or the retreat is over
meditation is yet be lo pyo lai da tu a yin lo pyo wa
yeah delusion
ya pyo lo chin lai lo lo ya
delusion is overjoyed he can do whatever he wants now you notice I don't say she
delusion is happy
တပီတော့ delusion ကအရင်ပြောရလို့ပြောရပြီးတော့တပီတော့အင်္ဂလိပ်နဲ့ he she တခုတော့ရမယ်လေသူမရှိတော့တပီတော့ he လို့သုံးတော့ she မသုံးလို့တတိထားမိလားဆိုတော့
ဟောပြအမောဟကလည်းခါဖွင့်ထားပြီဆိုကိလေသာတွေကအားနဲ့ဖြစ်နိုင်အရှင်ပြီးပြီးဖြစ်နိုင
် when we open the door for delusion, when delusion is allowed to play, then all the rest of the defilements, all the rest of the unwholesome qualities, they can come in full force. At the beginning of the retreat, Seattle said, always practice. Why? Because we're not skillful.And to become skillful, we need to always practice. But if we become skillful, if we've gained momentum, then keep always practicing. Why? Because you want it to become stronger, better, continue.
ကျေလို့အကောင်းလာရင်လည်းဆက်ပြောမှာပဲဆက်ပြီးအထုံးဘာဖြစ်လို့လဲ
and
ဒီဘဒုညင်းတဲ့မြင့်နေညာဖြစ်ဖို့
And if your practice becomes even stronger, what will you do? He said, continue to always practice. And why? Because you want the wisdoms to grow stronger and stronger, to have different new wisdom, deeper wisdom. The Buddha said, if someone is enlightened to the first degree, second degree, third degree, you're an anagami. He said, don't stop. Practice all the way until you're completely enlightened, an arahant. So the Buddha didn't want people to stop. He wanted them to go all the way. Because he wanted everyone to be totally free from suffering. As soon as possible. That was the Buddha's wish for everybody. And the nature of meditation is such that you can't really stop practicing. And why can't we stop practicing? He says, because the mind arises and passes away. And it leaves its power to the next mind that arises, right? But that power in our minds for the wholesome, for the potential to be enlightened, that power is not strong enough in our minds yet. So that's why we need to keep practicing. We were born with unwholesome, the potential for unwholesome qualities and with suffering. So we're born with them. And we're also born with the potential for all the wholesome qualities to grow in our minds. But we have a responsibility to grow the wholesome that we've been born with, to nurture it, cultivate it, make it stronger than the unwholesome, in the balance of our minds, to make the wholesome more steady and present in our minds at all times than the unwholesome. As children, we lived with a great deal of delusion. Children are born. We say that children are innocent. Innocent in Burmese is translated, is the words for innocent in Burmese is faultless. And his teacher used to say, are children really innocent? Like they have no fault? And his teacher said, they have one big fault, a huge fault. And what's that fault that children have? Is that they are completely deluded. They have a huge amount of delusion. So when we're born and there's so much delusion, and if the circumstances surrounding that child trigger defilements or unwholesome states of mind, the impact can be very, very strong on the mind. They can have very, very strong unwholesome states. So Sierra wants to ask all of you, do any of you want to become little children again, like when you were young? Do you want to be little again? No, that seems to be quite unanimous. But do you want to get older? You want to get old? You want to get old? One person is nodding her head.
But
But as we get older, the body gets older. There's a lot of destruction happens in the body. Nothing is good anymore experientially. You know, you ache, it hurts, you're weaker, less able. Yeah, so things become less and less easy as you get older. Yeah, nothing is very
easy.
But there is one thing that can become better as you grow older. What do you think that is? Can you tell him? I hear mind, experience, wisdom.
Yes.
Tiara says, that's it, wisdom. Wisdom can get better. In Burmese, there's a saying that when you're old, you're beautiful. Or the older, the more beautiful. And what is beautiful when you get old is the wisdom. When you grow old gracefully, wisely. All your experiences, your understanding is greater, and you set a good example for everyone else. But it doesn't happen to everybody. Not everyone grows old wisely. There are people that grow old and have more attachment, become more rigid, judgmental, etc. More stubborn. Yeah, very fixed in their ideas, difficult to convince them to see differently. That can happen. So, growing old doesn't guarantee that we will become wiser. It can be that we grow older and become more deluded, and that our the unwholesome, the defilements get are the ones that grow.
Responsibility.
So as we grow older, Sarah says, we need to, you know, take care of the mind so that we are getting older and wiser, because nothing else is going to get better. This is our only chance.
So
says, please always practice. No time is not suitable for practice. It's always suitable to practice, because that's the only way that your wisdom will grow, that you will become wiser.
He knows
that yogis want to practice, he said. People tell him, Sayadaw, they really want to practice. They ask him lots of questions to try and help them to practice. But what is in the way, Sayadaw says? We all want to practice meditation. What's in the way, Sayadaw says? We don't want to practice continuously. We really don't want to. We hope that if we do it part-time, some of the time, that it'll be okay. So that's why we don't really get around to practicing at home. Because the defilements, the unwholesome, the greed, the aversion, they make you like things, other things. So there are other things that you want to enjoy and do rather than be mindful and practicing all the time. And we are seduced by them into not being in practice mode all the time. We still want to enjoy life with the defilements. He says, do you all really want to get to Nibbana? Really? Do you know what that means? There's nothing there, apparently. We don't even know what Nibbana is. Why would we want it? Why would we want to get there? He says it's only through the practice, when we practice continuously and always, our wisdom grows, and it's that wisdom that gets a glimpse into what Nibbana might be, a glimpse. And if we get that glimpse, He says, that's when the mind really understands and wants to walk the path relentlessly to get there. But our wisdom isn't there. We haven't reached that understanding. So we kind of think we want to get there. It sounds like a good idea, but that's why we're not really committed. Because deep inside, we don't really know. So we don't know what Nibbana is, Yadav says, but we do know what suffering is.
Suffering,
and we experience suffering. And that's why we have to face suffering, because it's when we truly experience, understand, and touch suffering that we understand there can be the opposite, the end of suffering. Sato has said that wisdom sees not just one way, wisdom sees in two ways or many ways. If when there's wisdom, if white is known, then black will also be known. It's the ability to see two ways, two sides of a coin. So our way, our path is to understand suffering, actually, because that is what's real for us. We have suffering and we know it. And if we know it truly, deeply, if we really get in touch with suffering, then we will know that there is a possibility to end suffering. We will want that possibility and go for it. The Buddha, when he described Nibbana, the Buddha never described Nibbana in direct terms. He didn't say what Nibbana is. He always talked about what it in terms of what it is not. And one of the things he said is that where the defilements are absent totally is Nibbana. So we can't know Nibbana, Siyadu says. We can't know Nibbana because we don't know what the hell it is. But but we do know the defilements. So get to know them well so that you will know the end of them. So like he said, we were born with suffering and the unwholesome, the defilement, the seeds for them and their presence. And it's through them, through the understanding of the defilements and suffering, that we will understand freedom from the defilements and suffering. We don't have the ability nor the wisdom to directly understand or fathom what Nibbana might be. But we see the defilements and the unwholesome every day. So use the defilements and the unwholesome as your objects so that understanding about them grows to the point that you can understand them. And you can only understand them if you face them, watch them, learn from them, about them. So this is a goal. This is the far-off goal. But if you want to reach that goal, you have to keep walking towards the goal. You can't stop. So you must always be walking towards the goal. Because when you're not walking towards the goal, you are being pulled away from the goal relentlessly.
So
So to always practice is so, so very important. Even if we're not thinking about those far off, high flown goals, Siyada says, we can practice and practice, and you'll see that having the Dhamma in our lives always makes our lives more peaceful. We live it more peacefully, more wisely, more meaningfully, more harmoniously. As humans, we have a very fundamental desire, and that is for everything to be okay. Is that possible? For everything to always be okay? You think? No, you don't think so? No. A lot of shaking heads. That's because it's not been possible until now, right? That's our experience. It's not been always okay. But Seattle wants to challenge you to always be mindful. Always. In every facet of your life. In every facet of your life, challenge yourself to learn how to be mindful in situations that you find it difficult to be mindful. Find your own way. And Seattle says you will find that everything falls into place when you learn how to be mindful always. Seattle did not become a monk because he was suffering. He didn't do it to escape from anything. When he was practicing in daily life, because he was depressed, he went from depression to out of depression to becoming really wise. Everything fell into place in his life. Everything was going really smoothly. He had almost nothing that he could say was a great difficulty in his life anymore. Everything was fine. But the reason he chose to become a monk was because he felt that he wanted to further his wisdom. Things that other people thought were difficult, irritating, a burden, were no longer so for him. Everything was all right. But for things that other people thought were very important, for Seattle, sorry, the other way. Things that were very important for other people, for Seattle, those things weren't important anymore in his life. But there were things that other people considered very important, not important. And for Seattle, those things had become very important, like mindfulness. For us in our daily life, he says, we kind of bumble along, and it's not such great urgency for us to get that next bit of wisdom. It's not. We don't have that urgency. But for him, it was very strong. His view had become the opposite. The view of wisdom is the opposite of the view of delusion. So mainly, Seattle really wants to tell us how important continuity of mindfulness, to always be mindful, is so important in our lives. We can't stop. We can't stop practicing the Dhamma. In our lives, when do we have the most problems? Can you say like general spheres in our lives where we have the most problems? Where we find the most difficulty, challenge?
Problem. What is the problem?
What is our biggest problem? When do we first begin to have problems? Do we know? If we don't get to eat, it becomes a problem. If we don't get to sleep, it becomes a problem. But actually, Siara says, it's when we stop thinking it's a problem that it becomes a problem. When we don't get something to eat, when we don't have things to eat, Siara says, that's not a problem yet. It's just an experience. And then we think it's a problem. Then it becomes a problem. And when the... And of course, this is because of the defilements. And when the defilements are present, the unwholesome is present, then the problems become very big problems. But if we practice continuously, what is growing is our sati, samadhi, and panya. Then the defilements, the unwholesome, becomes less and less. Their power becomes less and less in our lives. And then we find that there are less and less problems. If we think about our lives and the times when we have defilements, unwholesome states of mind, you notice how long it takes, how long they stick around, how strong they are. They're always there. But when we practice always, our sati, samadhi, panya is growing, then defilements will come, but they can't stick around for long. We observe them and they clear out. This is what will eventually happen. And that is magic. It's like magic. Ordinary people can't do that. Yogis asked Yadro, if there was one thing that he would advise them, what would he say? And his advice is very simple. Always practice. Always be mindful. Continue to be so. We have never practiced continuously. Weeks or months or years on our own, not just in retreat. So we don't know what it's like. You can never imagine what it might become like. Even if you could imagine it, you have never experienced it. He says, it's such a good place to be, and only somebody who has been there will know what it's like, where everything falls into place. Siara says also, be most mindful when you are at home with your family and loved ones or close ones, because it is them that we blame the most for what we feel. It's not in fact their fault, but that's how it feels, because we get triggered the most easily by those closest to us, because we have the most expectations from them. Other people make us, you know, upset or whatever once in a while, but our family is with us all the time. Opportunity is rife.
Family member,
So watch your mind all the time. Check to see what your opinions, your judgments are about your own family members every time you see them. And then slowly, you will begin to have the right attitude. We are so careful with our enemies, with those that we are wary of. But our loved ones, we are not wary of our minds. We are just open and unguarded. So it is when we are with these people, with those that we are closest to, that we find that we have the most emotions. Yeah? So the place to practice the most is at home and with our loved ones. Sayadaw says, you only go to see a doctor when you have a disease, when you're sick. You don't apply medicine or take medicine when you're not sick. So when we're sick, Sayadaw says, he's noticed how when we are physically ill, you know, like here on retreat, he's noticed people are so willing and ready to take any medication. But all our mental diseases, our mental ailments, all our emotions, reasonable and, well, unreasonable, I mean, all our unreasonable emotions, Sayadaw says, we neglect them. We don't take care of them. We don't meditate them, medicate them. We don't
okay.
Yeah. So we medicate our bodies, but we meditate for our minds, and we don't do it. So we're always looking after our bodies, and we're really not taking care of our minds because we think it's somebody else's fault. He says the objects on retreat and the objects at home are the same. They are our 5-6 sense doors. Right? They're the 6 sense doors. Same objects, but our minds seem to be in different states when we're on retreat and when we're at home. When we go home, when we try to practice in daily life, yogis complain to Sayadaw, there are so many objects, I can't manage, I can't be mindful. Sayadaw says, there aren't so many objects. There are only 6. Your 6 sense doors. What yogis think is many objects is all the external objects, all the concept objects, all the things outside of yourself. But those are not objects of meditation. He has mentioned before that all those concept objects, the mind that pays attention to all the conceptual objects, is the defilement mind. The unwholesome mind's only object is the concepts. But the object of wisdom is nature. So the relationship is one way. So looking at conceptual objects doesn't always give rise to defilements and unwholesome states of mind. But if you're having an unwholesome state of mind or a defilement, you're definitely paying attention to a concept. So if they are triggering unwholesome states of mind and you continue to pay attention to those conceptual objects that are triggering the defilements, they will just continue. We will have more and more unwholesome states of mind. So consider those different states of mind that he mentioned just now. On retreat, what is our mind like? How are we mentally prepared towards meditation? What is the commitment we give to mindfulness and awareness and the Dhamma when we are on retreat? How much do we think about the Dhamma when we are on retreat? We wake up in the morning and we start thinking about how to be mindful on retreat. When we sit, we think about how to practice. When we walk, we think about how to practice. When we eat, we think about how to practice. When we sleep, we think about how to practice. That's what we do on retreat. So why are we not able to practice at home? Because we don't think like that all the time. Everything else becomes more important. I will practice when I have time, becomes the mantra. That's why we don't get around to really practicing always. We're also not motivated because we don't truly understand the value of the Dharma. But it's only when we practice always that we begin to experience the benefits of always practicing. And then when we have a taste of the benefits of always practicing, that motivates us to continue always practicing. The Buddha has said, the taste of all tastes is the taste of the Dhamma. Do you understand? Yes? The best of all. No, we don't understand the taste of the Dhamma, Siyadu said. We don't know that. Because if we really felt that the Dhamma was the best of all tastes, then we would only want to taste the Dhamma. We would not want to live without it. But this is something we need to be patient about. We need to be patient about, practice steadily, steadfastly, persevering, and we will slowly begin to understand what Siyadu was talking about, the benefits. When we are wealthy, it's because our income is more than our expenditure, right? To be wealthy. So to grow in the Dhamma, it means that our cultivation of wholesome states of mind in a 24-hour period, the balance must be that more than 12 hours is wholesome. How to measure the quality of our practice or the Dhamma in our lives is by measuring the quality of our minds. How strong is our greed still? How strong are our aversions still? How strong are our delusions still? So you watch yourself all day to see the balance of the wholesome and unwholesome in the mind. How many hours of wholesome mind states do you live with? And how many hours of unwholesome mind states do we live with? Can we cultivate the wholesome mind so that they are the ones that tip the scales?
We have
24 hours a day. How many hours do we manage to practice? And then you have to minus the time we sleep, because sleep is usually full of delusion. So 6 hours or 8 hours, minus that.
ไอ้เตียสักขะเปียวเปียนรู้สิเนี่ยมะเนี่ยตะแหน่งยัดในถ่ายมาแล้วตูถ่ายเนี่ยงานนี้ติๆถ่ายนี้ดิบ่ามันทุบเลยล่ะเปียวเลยเออบ่าจ่องเลยดูมีตั้วปะไล่ดิตั้ว
There was a yogi who asked Seattle once. He went for a retreat and they were advised on the retreat to sit every day an hour in the morning and an hour at night, and he did it faithfully. 2 hours every day, morning and night, and he did it faithfully for 5 years. And when he met Seattle, he said, Seattle, I've been doing this, and it doesn't seem to have made that much difference. So Seattle did the mathematics for him. 24 hours minus 6 hours of sleep, so you have 18 left. 18 minus 2 hours of meditation, 16 hours left. What do you do in the 16 hours?
You find me a party. So how do you do it? How do you do it?
16-hour unwholesome defilement party. So, Seattle says, expenditure is higher than income. How to become wealthy? So there can't be great change if this is the way the scales balance. For 2 hours, he'll be relieved. Better than not doing it at all. But it doesn't make a huge difference to the mind. Not enough. It's only when we are always practicing that the mind changes. When the mind changes, the person changes. And Seattle is realistic. It takes a long time. You need to give it time. You need to invest time, effort, patience, determination. But the benefits are many. It's worth the effort, the time, the patience, and the perseverance if you always practice. So Seattle says he would like us to go home and continue practicing. And he would like to remind us that we will lose mindfulness, and it doesn't matter. You lose mindfulness when you remember, be mindful again. You forget again, be mindful again. Whenever you remember, just be mindful when you remember. Just keep doing that. It's better than not having any mindfulness at all, or giving up because you think you can't always be mindful. And if you do that for weeks and months, and years, you will see a difference. Your mindfulness will make inroads. Someone who tries to practice every day for 10 weeks at home versus someone who persists and tries to practice for 10 months, Seattle says, big difference in quality of mind if they keep trying. 10 months and then 10 years, huge difference. Huge difference. So please continue practicing.